This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Cytonic, Skyward, Book 3. Written by Brandon Sanderson. Performed by Susie Jackson.
For Darcy Rhodes Stone, who deals with my made-up physics better than any physicist probably should. Thanks for all the help on this series. Prologue. A dark sphere appeared before me in the center of the room. Scud, was I really going to do this? In my hand, Doomslug fluted nervously. The sterile, whitewashed walls, enormous one-way mirror, and metal tables marked this as some kind of scientific facility. I was on Starsight, the massive space station that housed the regional offices of the Superiority. Up until this past year, I'd never even heard of the Superiority, let alone understood the nuances of how it, as a galactic government, ruled hundreds of different planets and species. To be honest, I still didn't understand those nuances. I'm not exactly a "there are nuances to this situation" type of girl. I'm more of an "if it's still moving, you didn't use enough ammunition" type of girl. Fortunately, nuance wasn't needed at the moment. The Superiority was undergoing a violent military coup, and the new people in charge did not like me. The shouts of the soldiers calling to one another as they searched the facility for me grew louder, hence the dark sphere. My only way out was to open a portal to another dimension. I thought of it as the nowhere. "Spensa," Embot said. "My thoughts. They're speeding up?" He hovered nearby, having stuffed himself into a little drone. It was shaped vaguely like a box with wings and a pair of grabber arms on the sides. Two tiny acclivity rings, blue stones that glowed when powered, allowed it to hover, one beneath each wing. He said, "that does not look safe." "They use these nowhere portals to mine acclivity stone," I said. "So there must be a way to return once you go through. Maybe I can get us back with my powers." The shouts outside were getting closer. There were no other options. I couldn't use my powers to hyperjump out of this place, not with the shield that protected the station. "Spensa," Embot said, "I feel very uncomfortable with this." "I know," I said, slinging my gun over my shoulder by its strap so I could grab his drone by the bottom of its chassis. Then, Embot in one hand, Doomslug in the other, I touched the dark sphere and was sucked through to the other side of eternity. In a flash, I was in a place where time, distance, and matter itself didn't exist. Here I was formless, a mind, or an essence, with no body. It was as if I were a starship floating in an endless blackness with no stars, with nothing at all to interrupt my view. Every time I hyperjumped using my powers, I briefly passed through this place. I was accustomed to the sensation, but it wasn't familiar. Just slightly less terrifying than it used to be. Immediately, I reached my mind out, searching for Detritus, my home. I'd begun to understand my powers in the most basic of ways. I couldn't go many places with them, but I did know how to get home. Usually. This time, I strained. Could I do it? Could I hyperjump to Detritus? The blackness around me seemed to stretch, and I could see white spots in the distance. One of those was Gran-Gran? If I could connect with her, I thought I could pull myself to her. I pushed harder, but grew worried that I'd draw attention. The Delvers lived here. And as soon as I thought of them, I became aware of their presence out there in the darkness, all around me, yet invisible for now. They didn't seem to have noticed me yet. In fact, they were fixated on something else. Pain. Terror. Something was in pain in here. Something familiar. The Delver. The one I'd prevented from destroying Starsight. It was here in this place, and it was afraid. As I focused on it, It appeared as a white point much brighter than Gran-Gran. It had noticed me. Please, help. Delver communication never manifested as actual words. My mind simply translated the impressions, the images, as words. This one needed my help. The others were trying to destroy it. I didn't think. Instinctively, I shouted into the nowhere, "Hey!" Hundreds of bright white spots opened around me. The eyes. I could feel their attention on me now, knowing me. The one they'd been fixated on hovered around the outside. As always, the sight of all those eyes intimidated me. Yet I was a different person now. I'd spoken to one of their kind, connected with it. I'd persuaded it to turn its appetite away from the people of Starsight by showing the Delver that they were alive. I just needed to do the same thing here. Please. I projected my thoughts toward those eyes, showing them calm understanding, not fear. I am a friend. I am like you. I think. I feel. I did exactly what I'd done before. The eyes stirred and quivered, agitated. A few drew closer, and I could feel their scrutiny, followed by an emotion, so much more powerful, pervasive, overwhelming, omnipresent. Hatred. The Delvers, there was no telling how many, accepted that I was alive. Because of my cytonic abilities, they understood me to be a person. Their hatred changed to disgust, anger. It was worse to know I was alive. It meant the things that had been encroaching upon their realm, persistently bothering them, were self-aware. We weren't mere insects. We were invaders. I tried again, more desperate this time. They rebuffed me, as if they'd seen what I'd done to the one of their kind and had prepared themselves to resist the same sort of approach. I recoiled at the wave of their terrible anger, and I heard a terrified scream. Doomslug? Her shout projected something into my brain, a location. Home. The Delvers withdrew. I unnerved them, it seemed. They hadn't expected to find me here. That gave me an opening. Thanks to Doomslug, I could feel the path. I could get to Detritus. I could see Gran-Gran and Jorgen. Scud, I missed him. I wanted to be near him again, talk to him again. I needed to get home to my friends and help them. The war was going to escalate now that Winzik had seized control of the superiority. I almost hyperjumped, but I lingered. Something held me back. An impression, an instinct. What am I? That singular Delver projected in a pleading tone. What are we? I'm Spensa Nightshade, I sent to it. A pilot. Is that all? It used to be all I cared about. But now I discovered another side to me. Something frightening. Something I didn't completely understand. There is a way to learn, the Delver sent. In this place. We call it the Nowhere. You sensed that, didn't you? Yes, I had. But I didn't want to stay here. I tried to put that option out of my mind. I needed to go home. But did my people need me? Just another pilot? I visualized something then. A projection of my own fears. Maybe it was an effect of the Nowhere. I saw myself return and rejoin Skyward Flight, fighting and failing. Failing when the Delvers inevitably returned, because a fighter pilot, no matter how skilled, couldn't defeat them. Failing when the superiority marshaled the power of its cytonics, hyperjumping whole fleets. Worse, they could manipulate cytonics such as me, exploit weaknesses in our powers. They'd done that to my father, turned him against his own flight, led him to death. I was a pilot, yes, but pilots weren't enough. We knew so little about any of this. We didn't understand what the Delvers were. How could we hope to fight them? We didn't understand cytonics. Up until recently, we'd considered those who had these powers to be defects. How could I face opponents like Braid, skilled with their talents, if I ran from who I was? Home called to me and I yearned to return. But home didn't have answers. Can you show me? I asked the Delver. What I am?
Maybe. I don't even know what I am. There is a place we can learn. A place in the nowhere. A place where we were all born.
There are no places in the nowhere, I sent.
Not in its heart, no. But at the fringes, there are settlements.
I saw the meaning. The Delver spoke of a region where acclivity stone was mined. Another mystery I had never quite understood. How did people go into the nowhere and harvest that rock if the nowhere was a formless void? Yes, there were actual places on the fringes, places important to Cytonix, important to me. The Delver put one of these locations into my mind. I hung, trapped between two opposite poles. One, my desire to go home, to hold Jorgen, to laugh with my friends. The other, something frightening, unknown, like the frightening unknown things in my own soul.
If you come here, the Delver sent, it will be difficult to return. Very difficult. And you might get lost.
I felt Doomslug's mind trembling. The rest of the Delvers began to reappear, eyes opening, piercing white holes in reality, burning and hating. They did not want me going where that Delver directed. In the end, that was what prompted my decision. I'm sorry, Jorgen, I sent, hoping he could at least feel the words. I had to choose the path that led to answers. Because in that moment, I was absolutely certain it was the only way to protect the people I loved. You go home, I told Doomslug. I will find my way later. I grabbed hold of the destination the Delver had sent me.
Thank you,
the Delver projected. I could feel its sincere relief.
Seek to walk the path of elders, and remember to not get lost.
Wait, I sent. The path of elders? But the Delver withdrew, and I felt the others preparing to attack. So I gave Doomslug a final push to go home, then activated my powers and threw myself into the unknown. Part 1. Chapter 1. I dropped out of a wall. Like, I emerged straight from the stone. I flopped forward in a heap of tangled clothing and limbs. Embot made a grunting noise as his drone body fell out beside me, but there was no sign of Doomslug. I scrambled to my feet, orienting myself, looking around to see a jungle? Like a real jungle. I'd seen pictures in school of old Earth, and this place reminded me of those. Imperious, moss-covered trees, branches like broken arms, twisted and draped with thick vines like power lines. It smelled like the algae vats, only more dirty, earthy. Scud. It truly was a jungle, like where Tarzan of the Apes had lived in Gran Gran's stories. Were there apes here? I'd always thought I'd make a good queen of the apes. Embot hovered up, turning around to take it in. The wall we'd fallen out of was behind us, a flat stone freestanding in the jungle, like a monolith. It was overgrown with weeds and vines, and I recognized the carvings in it. I'd seen similar carvings on a wall in the tunnels on Detritus. I knew from the Delver's impressions that this was the nowhere. That felt right to me, for reasons I couldn't explain. Somehow, I had to find answers in this place, which seemed a whole lot more daunting to me now than it had moments ago. Scud. I had barely escaped the superiority with my life. Now I thought I could find answers about the Delvers, one of the universe's greatest cosmic mysteries. Not merely about the Delvers, I thought. About myself. Because in those moments when I touched the nowhere and the beings that resided in it, I felt something that terrified me. I felt kinship. I took a deep breath. First order of business was an inventory. Mbot looked fine, and I still had my stolen energy rifle. I felt a ton more safe holding it. I wore what I'd escaped in, a standard superiority pilot's jumpsuit, a flight jacket, and a pair of combat boots. Mbot hovered up to eye level in his drone, his grabber arms twitching. "A jungle?" he asked me. To him, the time I'd spent communing with the Delver would have passed in an instant. Spencer, why are we in a jungle? Not sure, I said. I glanced around for any sign of Doomslug. She was cytonic, like me. Slugs were what made ships able to hyperjump, and I hoped that she'd done as I'd asked and jumped to safety on Detritus. To be certain, I reached out with my powers to see if I could sense her. Also, could I jump home? I stretched outward and felt nothing. I mean, I still had my powers, but I couldn't sense Detritus, or the Delver Maze, or Starsight, none of the places I could normally hyperjump to. It was eerie, like waking up at night and turning on the lights, only to find infinite blackness around you. Yes, I was definitely in the nowhere. When we entered the black sphere, I felt the Delvers, I said to Mbot, and I talked to one of them, the one from before. It said to walk the path of elders. I rested my fingers on the wall behind us. I think this is a doorway, Mbot.
The stone wall? Mbot asked. The portal we entered was a sphere.
Yeah, I said, looking up at the sky through the trees. It was pinkish for some reason.
Maybe we passed through the nowhere and came out on another planet,
Mbot said. No, this is the nowhere. Somehow. I stomped my foot, testing the soft earth beneath. The air was humid, like in a bath, but the jungle felt too quiet. Weren't these places supposed to be teeming with life? Beams of light filtered in from my right, parallel to the ground. So was it sunset here? I'd always wanted to see one of those. The stories made them sound dramatic. Unfortunately, the trees were so thick that I couldn't make out the source of the light, merely the direction. We need to study this place, I said. Set up a base camp, explore the surroundings, get our bearings. As if he hadn't heard, Mbot floated closer to me. Mbot?
Spencer, I am angry.
Me too, I said, smacking my hand with my fist. I can't believe that Braid betrayed me, but
I'm angry at you,
Mbot interrupted, waving an arm.
Of course, what I feel is not real anger. It's just a synthetic representation of emotion created by my processors to present humans with a realistic approximation of gah.
I set aside my own concerns and focused on how he sounded. When I'd first found Mbot in the little drone, his speech had been sluggish and slurred, like he'd been on heavy pain meds. But he was speaking clearly now, and quickly, more like his old self. He buzzed back and forth in front of me like he was pacing.
I don't care anymore if the emotions are fake. I don't care that my routines simulate them. I am angry, Spencer. You abandoned me on Starsight.
I had to, I said. I had to help Detritus.
They ripped my ship apart, he said, zipping the other direction.
Then he froze in place, hovering.
My ship. My body. It's gone.
He drooped in the air, sagging down almost to the ground. Mbot, I said, stepping up. I'm sorry, really. But look, can we have this conversation later? I was pretty sure that jungles like this were full of dangerous beasts. At least, in Grand Grand stories, people always got attacked in jungles. It made sense. Anything could be hiding out among those shadowed trunks and deceptive ferns. I remembered how intimidated I'd felt when I'd first stepped out of the caverns and seen the sky. There had been so many directions to look, so many open places. This was even more unnerving. Something could come at me from any direction. I reached down to touch Mbot's drone, which still hovered near the ground. We should map the area, I said.
and see if we can find a cave or something for shelter. Does that drone of yours have any kind of sensors? Are you picking up any signs of civilization, like radio broadcasts? There are mining operations in here, I think. When he didn't reply, I knelt beside him. Embot?
Aye, he said. Am angry.
Look, you don't care. You never care about me. You left me.
I came back, I said. I left you because I had to. We're soldiers. Sometimes we have to make difficult decisions.
You're a soldier, Spensa, he shouted, hovering up in the air.
I'm a survey AI designed to search for mushrooms. Why do I keep letting you push me into doing things? I didn't want to even enter that sphere, and you pulled me in. Ah!
Scud. That drone had surprisingly powerful speakers. And as if in reply to his shouts, something roared in the distance. The sound echoed in the forest ominously. Look, I said softly to Embot. I understand. I'd be a little angry in your place, too. Before I could finish, he zipped away into the jungle, sobbing softly to himself. I cursed and tried to follow, but he could fly, while I had to deal with the underbrush. I leaped over a fallen tree trunk, but on the other side, I had to wiggle through a tangle of vines and fronds. After that, something caught my foot, and I ended up tumbling to the ground. When I finally managed to right myself, I realized I had no idea what direction he'd gone. In fact, what direction had I come from? Was that log over there the one I'd climbed over? No. That had been before I'd pushed through the vines, so I groaned, settling into the hollow of some overgrown roots, gun in my lap, and sighed. Well, my quest had started in a traditional Spensa-like fashion, with everyone mad at me. I realized that I needed a moment to decompress. Embot wasn't the only one with a lot of powerful emotions. I'd gone from confronting a delver to floating in space thinking I was dead to waking up in a hospital to escaping a hit squad sent to kill me. Now I'd had to make a snap decision about coming to this place, and I worried I was wrong. Maybe I should have gone home and found a way to send someone else into the nowhere to find answers. Someone smart, like Rig, or someone careful, like Kimmelin. Right now, I felt lost. I didn't know what had happened to Kuna, and I worried about my friends. I was alone, isolated, lost. And to top it off, my only companion, who was supposed to be the emotionally stable one by programming design, had just thrown a tantrum and left. Did people in Grand Grand's stories ever feel like this? I wished I knew what Cthulhun of Mongolia or Calamity Jane of the Wild West had done when feeling overwhelmed. I don't know how long I sat there, long enough to notice that whatever was providing the light here didn't seem to be moving. I let myself fixate on that instead of my mounting anxiety about Jorgen and my friends. I'd made my decision. Now that I was here, I needed to learn what I could, then find a way home. Embot, I said to the trees, my voice coming out as a croak. If you can hear me, would you please come back? I promise to apologize, and I'll even let you have the first insult. No reply. Only the sound of faintly rustling leaves. So I forced myself to focus on a more detailed inventory of my assets, a way to do something about my situation, no matter how small, in order to start reasserting control. Cobb had taught me that. Scud. I'd told Cobb that Kuna's faction wanted peace. Winzik and Braid could use that to lure Cobb into talks, then double-cross him. No, I told myself. Inventory. I gave my rifle a quick once-over. I'd barely used up any of its charge during my escape, which meant I had a power source, and roughly 500 shots, depending on whether I used standard energy rounds or amped rounds. My jumpsuit didn't include a medic belt, unfortunately, or a pilot survival kit. I did have the translator pin I'd been using at Starsight to understand alien languages. I fished in the pockets of the jacket, hoping maybe I'd shoved a knife or something into one of them without remembering. Instead, I pulled out a handful of glowing sand,
glowing. Sand. Silver, like it was made of ground-up starfighter hull, and glistening. It was such an incongruous sight that I sat there staring at it as some dribbled between my fingers. Saints. What was it? I closed my hand and returned it to my pocket where I noticed something else. A lump at the bottom of the sand? I dug down and pulled out my father's pilot's pin, the one I'd kept hidden away since his death. Yet I knew it hadn't been on me when I jumped into the portal. I didn't even have it on Starsight. I'd left it on Detritus, in my bunk. So how was it suddenly in my pocket, surrounded by silver sand? Weirded out by its appearance, I tucked the pin away. I didn't find anything else hiding in my pockets, but I had one other asset I could think of, my powers. I knew I couldn't hyperjump home. I couldn't even feel home in here. But I had other abilities. The first I had ever manifested was the power to hear the stars, which in practical terms meant I could communicate across long distances. Maybe I couldn't hyperjump out of here, but could I reach Grand Grand mentally? I settled back against the tree and decided to give it a try. I just closed my eyes and listened, extending my mind. That sounds silly, but I'd spent hours with Grand Grand practicing this. And today I felt something. There was a mind near me. It was familiar, like a presence I'd once known. Who was it? Not Grand Grand. Not Jorgen. Not even the Delver. I tried contacting the mind and I got a sensation of contentment? That was odd. Then I felt something else, a second mind nearby. They were Cytonic, whoever they were, because the moment our minds brushed, a voice popped into my head. "Ho there," it said. "Another Cytonic in the belt?" "Yes," I sent. "I'm lost. Can you help?" "Careful now," the voice said. "Dangerous things can hear you in here if you use your powers. Where are you? Describe your fragment, and I shall endeavor to locate you." "Fragment," I sent. "I'm in a jungle by, a tree?" I needed to find a better landmark. As soon as I considered it, though, I hesitated. What if this was an enemy? How did I know the voice could be trusted? At that moment, I got attacked. Chapter 2. There were three of them. Two bird-like humanoids with wing arms leaped around the tree from the right to tackle me, and a blue-skinned Dione came in from the left, probably to go for the rifle, which I had slung over that shoulder. It was a good plan, but man, were they sloppy. The first avian slipped as it jumped, tripping the other one and giving me enough warning to turn and start raising my weapon. That almost let me shoot them, but the energy blast went wild as the Dione got a hand on the gun. They grunted, trying to brute force wrestle the rifle away. The wrong move. Even I knew that from my limited DDF training. They should have slapped the barrel, controlled the weapon with one hand, and then gone for my face with the other. I shoved the Dione away, but the two avians tackled me. Grunting, I rammed the butt of the gun into one of them, earning me a squawk of pain. I pulled hard, twisting, and started to wiggle free. Unfortunately, just as I was about to slide out of the writhing mess of people, someone else grabbed me from behind. A feathered fourth enemy? The group had apparently been smart enough to leave someone in reserve. I struggled against the fourth attacker, disoriented, as a fifth creature body-checked me. I didn't get a good look at this last guy. He was furry and roughly the size of a refrigerator, while I'm, well, not. I'd stretched the truth to get 152 centimeters listed on my pilot records. Being small is an advantage in a cockpit, not so much in a fistfight. I'd like to think I gave a good showing, but in seconds I was lying on the ground completely disarmed, with the furry one sitting on top of me and one of the avians pointing my own rifle at my head. "So," the avian with the gun said, the translated words chirping out from my pin. "What have we here? A superiority soldier? Well, that's a nice surprise. A human, even.
I'm not afraid of your kind, human. But keep struggling, and I'll shoot you and be done.
I groaned and stopped fighting. I reached my hands out to the sides, where they were roughly grabbed and held down. At last, I was released from the buttward side of that alien and was able to get a deep breath of fresh air. My captors pulled me to a sitting position and bound my hands behind my back. I focused on the avian with the gun. I'd heard of this species. The Heklo, I thought they were called. They had long beaks, kind of like a stork, but their feathers were of radiant colors. The combat fatigues they wore had no sleeves, but the feathers on their arms didn't seem large enough to support flight. They seemed more a vestige, like how humans had hair instead of fur.
"What do you want to do with it, Vlep?"
asked the furry alien. It was vaguely gorilla-like. I'd seen this species too, Burls, if I remembered their name correctly.
"That depends," Vlep, the armed one and the obvious leader, said. "Human, why did they send you through? This portal is for exiles, yet here you are, uniformed and armed."
Right. I was wearing a superiority jumpsuit and jacket. That, with the weapon, had led them to assume I was working with the enemy. The comment also told me something else. The wall was a portal, and this place was where people appeared once the superiority exiled them. I'd seen that happen. In fact, I looked at the Burl.
"Golza?"
I asked. I'd watched a Burl get exiled into the nowhere a few days ago.
"Ha," the Burl said. "We grabbed him when he came in."
"So that's why you're here," Vlep said. "Hunting that specific fugitive? Curious."
I wasn't, of course. But I could now see that the Burl who had captured me had slightly different features. I wasn't the best at distinguishing one alien from another, but this Burl was shorter, more stout, and had a wider face. So this group, whoever they were, had an outpost here and captured people who were sent in. Why, though? Exiles wouldn't have anything valuable on them. And who was the Cytonic I'd contacted? Had I led these to me by using my powers? Or was I just jumping to conclusions? I reached out with my senses again, seeking that mind. It wasn't one of these. It was a little farther away.
"What?"
the voice said as I brushed it with my mind.
"I told you to be quiet."
"I've been taken captive," I said, "by a group of raiders or something who were watching the portal where I came in."
"Pirates,"
the mind sent.
"This is cannonade territory. They're a rough group. Hold your tongue. Don't let them know what you are. And please stay quiet, Cytonically. You'll draw the Delvers."
"Not talking, I see," Vlep said, pulling my attention back. "Hold her tight."
The Dione and another Heklo grabbed me while Vlep began rummaging through my pockets. I struggled again. It felt violating to have their hands all over me, though I'd expected to be searched. Soon, Vlep pulled some of the silver dust from my pocket.
"Ha! Huh. A nice haul."
He dug in it, then brought out the pin. His eyes went wide, which seemed to be an expression of surprise for his species. The Burl let out a low growl, which might also have been surprise.
"A reality icon?" Vlep asked, then looked at me. "You must be someone important."
My heart leaped as he closed a feathered hand around the pin. But it seemed like a bad idea to show how important that pin was to me, so I forced myself to relax. "I really have no idea what you're talking about."
"Well, thanks for the treasure," Vlep said.
He tucked the pin into a small pouch.
"Do we shoot her now?"
the Burl asked. "I don't like the idea of taking a soldier as a servant. Too dangerous."
"Could be useful in a fight," the Dione said, "if they join us. Imagine having a human on our side."
"Broadsiders have one," Vlep said, "and he's useless. They don't live up to their reputations, trust me. But we're not going to shoot her. The superiority sent her in armed, so she's valuable to them. We'll ransom her back to the mining base."
So there were mining stations in here. At least that gave me a good lead on how I might get out once I accomplished what I needed to in here. Right now, my best chance at escape was to get the pirates to underestimate me. So I slumped down. "I'm going to get into so much trouble for this," I moaned.
"Ha!" Vlep said. "Well, good news. Now that we know Gulza is valuable, maybe we can ransom him too. Double the haul."
He looked at the pouch.
"Triple. Or more. Stand her up. Let's get moving. Judging from that roar earlier, there's a grig in here somewhere. I'd rather not run into it."
He started off through the jungle, and the others pulled me along. I made a few token complaints and struggles, then slumped as I walked, pretending to be defeated. Secretly, I studied them. These pirates clearly weren't trained soldiers. Vlep didn't understand muzzle control. He turned and absently swung the weapon toward the others when they spoke to him. I wasn't surprised. The superiority denounced what they called aggression, and its people were unlikely to have combat training. Winzik and his cronies liked it that way. It made people easier to control. So maybe this group had formed from exiles? A couple had weapons at their hips, a knife on the burl, and what appeared to be a pistol at Vlep's side. But they hadn't used those on me. They'd purposely taken me alive, though perhaps they'd been surprised by how well I fought and how well I'd been armed. I could probably exploit their ignorance. At least someone more capable could have exploited it. I didn't have the training for this kind of thing. I couldn't really use that argument anymore, could I? I hadn't been training as a spy, but I'd infiltrated the superiority. And arguably, I'd done a pretty good job. At least until everything had gone wrong at the end. I'd chosen to come here. It was time to stop complaining about my situation. "Hey, Vlep," I said, trying to hurry up and catch him at the front of the group. I stumbled almost immediately, nearly tripping on hidden vines. Running away wasn't really an option, not while my hands were tied. I righted myself with some help from the Dione, then called again. "Vlep, you all, you're exiles, aren't you? Making the best of a bad situation? I can help you. I'm not your enemy." "In here," the Heklo said. "Everyone's our enemy." "I'm a soldier," I said. "I can train your people, help you. I just need a little information about this place and about—" He stopped and turned his gun on me.
"No talking unless you're asked a question. You're in cannonade territory now. Keep your head down, and hope I don't decide you're too much trouble to be worth keeping alive."
"You know, Vlep," one of the other Heklo said, "I think I might know her. Is that Winzik's pet human?"
"Winzik," Vlep snapped. "Who is that?"
"Sorry," the Heklo said. "I forget how little about the outside gets in here. One of the high officials of the superiority keeps a human bodyguard. I think that's her."
"Curious," Vlep said, narrowing his eyes at me. "Why would they send you to chase an exile human? Or did you finally cross the superiority and earn your inevitable reward?"
"They'd mistaken me for Braid?" Guess I wasn't the only one who had trouble distinguishing one alien from another. As soon as I thought of Braid, I winced. I'd failed so badly in trying to recruit her. She was Cytonic, and was the one who had summoned the Delver that had gone on to attack Starsight. If I'd been able to get through to her somehow, all of this would— A terrible, monstrous call tore through the jungle. It was so deep and sonorous. It made the trees vibrate. The entire group froze in place and peered outward through the trees and vines. What in the unholy universe could make such a sound?
"It's getting closer," Vlep whispered. "Quickly. Back to the ships."
Wait,
ships?
Dared I hope they had starfighters in here? I sure would feel more confident in the cockpit of a ship. When they started walking again, I hurried along with them. And gloriously, like debris parting to reveal heaven itself, the trees fell away and we entered a small clearing with three ships in it. Two mid-sized civilian craft and a sleek, dangerous-looking starfighter. It was like fate had seen me struggling and decided to send me a little gift in the form of an interceptor-class ship with twin destructors. I was so captivated by its beauty that I missed something important. The group had halted around me, and they weren't looking at the ships, but at the two pirates who had presumably been left to guard them. One was a Dione, who seemed panicked and was trying to administer some kind of medical kit to the other, a Burl, who was sitting on the ground by one of the ships, female, I assumed from her size. And her face was melting. Chapter 3. The strange visage made me gape in shock. Though her body was gorilla-shaped, and she was wearing utilitarian clothing like the others, she had no nose, just a small lump where one had been, and a thin slit for a mouth. Her cheeks sagged to the sides, and her eyes, a milky white, were open and staring forward. There was something distinctly unnatural about that face. What had happened to her?
Tie down the prisoner for now, Vlep told the Dione, who yanked me over to the side of the clearing.
There they anxiously tied my hands, still bound behind me, to part of a tree to hold me in place. A root, perhaps? Then the Dione ran over to join the others gathering around the Burl. I immediately started trying to worm free. Unfortunately, their knot-tying skills were superior to their combat abilities. I was secured tightly, so I resorted to rubbing my binding against the bark in hopes of making it fray.
What happened? Vlep demanded of the Dione guard. What did you do to her?
Nothing. I just wandered out into the trees to relieve myself, then came back to—
A confused Dione gestured at the figure.
Scud.
That melty-faced alien was getting unnerving. The others argued for a moment, then one suggested they try the reality ashes, which turned out to be the silvery dust from my pocket. Vlep began sprinkling it on top of the Burl. As I watched, her eyes started to glow, beneath the skin as if there were something inside her, a pure white light. It reminded me of the eyes, of Delver's. Oh, saints. I tried to yank free of the root, and it did have some give to it, but I wasn't quite strong enough to pull it out of the ground, so I returned to rubbing my bonds on the bark.
A little to the left, a peppy voice said from behind. There's a rougher part there that might help.
I paused, then twisted to look over my shoulder, to where a small drone hovered, hidden among the underbrush.
Embot,
I said, then hushed, glancing at the pirates. They were only about 7 meters away, but fortunately they didn't seem to have heard.
You found me.
Well, you weren't exactly quiet, Spensa, Embot said, hovering closer. I see you found some friends. That's nice. Look, we need to talk. A heart-to-heart. Heart-to-processing unit simulating a biological function like a heart.
Now's not a great time. Embot shook a grabber arm at me.
The emotions of biological beings often come at inconvenient times. I've dealt with yours on many occasions. And Spensa. I think I have feelings now.
That's not surprising. You had them before, no matter what you said.
Spensa, Embot continued, I've been thinking and feeling. I really was angry that you left me behind to be ripped apart, gutted, and killed. But I understand why you did it. I shouldn't have been so angry at you. I overreacted.
Great, I said, struggling to get loose. I'm sorry too, and I forgive you.
You do?
Yes, of course, I said, twisting to the side to show him my bound wrists. Look, can you—
Oh, thank you, Spensa, he said. Thank you, thank you. I feel so warm. Maybe my power matrix is overheating. But it's marvelous. I feel like I'm going to cry, though that's physically impossible for me. Could you? Maybe I could have mechanical tear ducts installed on this drone, so I could be like you and leak. You become less efficient with your secretions when you're emotional.
I took a deep breath. In the stories, the heroines always had trusty steeds who could not talk, or loyal, quiet sidekicks. I could see why. The Lone Ranger probably wouldn't have accomplished much if his horse had been a mushroom-obsessed blabbermouth. Still, I was really glad to see him. I glanced toward my captors. They were holding down the sick Burl, who seemed to be having a spasm. My heart went out to her, but her distress was timed perfectly. The pirates would have noticed Embot for sure otherwise.
Spensa, he said. Oh, are you tied up? You're only now noticing? I growled. What did you think I was doing with these ropes?
I thought you were trying to scratch an itch. That's why I pointed out the rough part of the root. You biological beings are always scratching things. Skin must be awful.
He hesitated. To be honest, I should have figured out you were captive. It's actually rather obvious.
I was distracted by all these emotions my processors are inexplicably simulating.
Hmm. Yep. Those are ropes.
Help get me out of them?
Right. I will. Search for knot untying solutions in my database.
Or you could untie them, I hissed.
I'm not sure how. It's not that hard. For you, maybe. I'm not exactly used to being able to do things, Spensa. I'm an information support AI. I don't know how to act. In fact, I've needed to send my self-shutdown protocols into an infinite loop. They don't like me being able to fly myself around.
The people who had made his old ship had implanted deep controls on his personality. It said a lot that he had progressed enough to circumvent some of those. An outburst from the pirates pulled my attention back to the sick Burl. She was struggling and thrashing, and had thrown one of the Heklo away with incredible strength. Quickly, I hissed. Do you have anything that could help me escape?
I have a light line, Embot said. I found one in the shop on a worker drone and moved it to myself. I was planning to use it in my escape. Maybe I could drag you away?
A light line was a plus, though his acclivity rings were small, and the drone was only about the size of a lunch tray, if quite a bit thicker. It wouldn't have a lot of power. Attach the light line to the ropes on my hands, I said. Maybe with your added strength, we can rip this root out of the ground and I can pull myself free. Get ready. We have to do this before the pirates notice what we're doing.
Yeah, Embot said. About that.
The pirates were running for their ships, having apparently decided to abandon the one with the melting face. The male Burl didn't like this.
Give me the icon, Vlep, the Burl shouted. We have to try. Maybe it will work.
But Vlep wasn't listening. As the others were running for their ships, he'd turned to look at me. He'd seen Embot. He immediately raised the rifle toward us, apparently deciding I was too dangerous to let live.
Get ready,
a voice said in my mind. Ready? I thought, staring down that rifle. For what? The ground started shaking. Trees trembled. Vlep swung the gun away from me and pointed it toward the approaching sounds. Then a scudding dinosaur came rampaging into camp with a mustachioed human man riding on its back. Chapter 4. Yes, a dinosaur. I mean, I've never seen one before, but this thing was reptilian, walked on two legs, and had a long tail trailing behind it. Yeah, the eyes appeared to be on its shoulders, and its neck was long like a trunk and ended in a toothy mouth. So maybe enormous demonic anteater would have been a better description, but I'm going with dinosaur. The human was almost as baffling to me. He wore a flight jacket and combat trousers and looked to be in his 50s. He was square-jawed, muscular for his age, and his mustache stuck out a good 15 centimeters to either side. As the dinosaur stormed forward, the man slipped expertly down the animal's flank, then hit the ground and rolled. It was just about the most incredible entrance I'd ever seen. Why hadn't I ever been able to ride a dinosaur into combat, then dismount with a flourish? Oh, wait. Escaping, right. The stranger's arrival had taken all attention off me. Now, I shouted at Embot. I heaved up to a squatting position, then tried to stand, pulling with all my strength to snap the root I'd been tied to. Embot hovered up beside me, towing the root with his light line as I'd asked. With his added strength, the root gave, and I stumbled free. I found my balance and pushed my hands down my back and squatted, then pulled my bound wrists under my feet to get my hands in front of me. There are advantages to being my shape and size.
"Excellent to meet you in person, my cytonic friend," the stranger said, bounding up to me and yanking out a hunting knife.
I proffered my hands, and he sliced the ropes with a single cut. Then he offered his own hand in a gentlemanly sort of way.
"Chet Starfinder, interdimensional galactic explorer."
He had to shout over the sound of the monster rampaging through the camp. The ground shook with its thundering gait.
"That's an awesome name," I shouted at him. "Thanks, I made it up myself. What now?"
"Fancy stealing a starfighter?" I said, pointing.
"Music to my ears, young lady," he shouted back. "It's been far too long since I've had the chance."
Unfortunately, the sleek ship was already taking off. The pirates had scattered. Only three remained: the male Burl, the glowing-eyed female Burl he was trying to pull to safety, and Vlep. He was shooting at the dinosaur, which remarkably didn't seem to be hurt by the energy blasts. We still had a chance to grab one of the civilian ships, a shuttlecraft. I hesitated, though, eyeing Vlep. The feathered alien had the pouch with my father's pin. For some reason, in that moment, the pin felt more important.
"Change of plans," I said, running for Vlep.
Chet joined me in my charge. Vlep continued firing at the dinosaur, which was ignoring him in favor of snapping toward one of the ships as it took off. I hit Vlep from behind, right at the knees, sending him sprawling. Chet scooped up the gun while I pulled at the struggling Heklo's uniform coat, eventually yanking the pouch out of his pocket.
"Freeze!"
a voice said from behind. I spun and found the sleek ship hovering nearby. Destructors pointed at me. Vlep took the chance to scramble away, leaving me without a captive. Chet dropped the gun and threw his hands up. Ship-mounted weapons would be powerful enough to vaporize us completely. Fortunately, the pilot had forgotten the dinosaur. It seized the wing with a furious bite. I dove for the underbrush, and Chet was only a moment behind me. Embot belatedly swooped over to us. I glanced at the last ship, but Vlep was climbing aboard, and the others were firing on the dinosaur. Crossing that clearing would be risking death from a stray shot.
"I believe," Chet said, "Operation Ship Steal will have to be canceled. My regrets."
"It's all right," I said.
"Shall we?"
he said, gesturing into the jungle.
"I'd rather not remain in the line of sight of those vessels."
In the clearing, the female Burl had come out of her daze and slammed the male against a tree. He slumped to the ground, his eyes closed, and she turned immediately toward me, as if she could sense where I was. Her eyes looked like they'd grown over with skin, smoothing the sockets. But deep within her skull, two white dots, glowing with what I could feel distinctly was an intense hatred, shone through. My breath caught in my chest. Then the Burl pointed and screamed at me. Scud. I gave up any last hope of getting one of those ships. I joined Chet and dashed into the jungle, chased by the sounds of destructor fire and monster roars. Chapter 5. Chet ran in front of me, and he seemed to have a sixth sense for where to step. I was able to follow him fairly quickly, avoiding any pitfalls or hidden tree branches. I supposed jungle survival was part of an interdimensional space explorer's standard repertoire. Embot hovered along beside me.
"Spencer," he said, "I think I'm simulating fear, or no. It's time to stop talking like that. I feel afraid. I am afraid."
Well, that seemed like progress. The shouting faded behind us, and I was glad to put a large distance between me and that creature with the glowing eyes. Though I did feel another stab of worry for Doomslug. I assumed she'd hyper-jumped home, but what if she'd only jumped somewhere nearby in here instead? I felt terrible for not being able to do a longer search for her. But, well, Hopefully, if she was in here, she was safe. Honestly, if I had to lay bets on me, Embat, or the slug surviving in this jungle alone, she'd top the list. We ran until we could no longer hear gunfire. Finally, Chet nodded to me, and the two of us huddled down beside a moss-covered log. This place felt so alien. What did you do surrounded by all this life? Planet surfaces were supposed to be barren expanses of rock and craters. That was natural and normal. Not this greenery. Alas, Chet said quietly, the pirates finally seem to have noticed that the beast feeds on energy. You can't hurt them with such weapons, but approach with a small power matrix as an offering, and they become quite tame. Griggs are used as pack animals, for all their fearsome appearance. She should be full from all those blasts. I bet she'll wander off and have a sleep now. Still, I think we should proceed as silently as possible, because of that thing with the shining eyes.
I didn't like the look of that at all.
I nodded in agreement. Thank you, I whispered, for your help. I didn't get a chance to introduce myself. Spencer Nightshade.
Excellent name, he whispered back.
As for my help, it was a pleasure. I was already prowling cannonade territory, looking for some action, you might say. And I found it, yes, I did. Helping a fellow Cytonic is a hearty reward on its own. That said, he trailed off, glancing at Embat. Now, I don't want to pry, but did I hear you speaking to that drone? Oh, right, I said. This is Embat.
Hello,
Embat whispered. I'm not so scared any longer. That feels nice.
Ah, Chet said. You, brought an AI into the nowhere, did you?
That's bad, I take it?
Yes, well, I believe that word to be an understatement, Spencer Nightshade.
Do your people not know about the Delvers?
We met one, Embat exclaimed. Well, Spencer did. I was being murdered at the time, but I heard about it on the news. Sounded scary.
Ah, yes, well then. Chet looked at me. Your AI has gone fully sentient, I see. I thought you were newly arrived, but full sentience usually takes a few weeks.
Technically, Embat said, hovering a few centimeters closer to him, the word sentient just means an ability to perceive and or feel. Many people misuse this word. Instead, sapience is the word for self-awareness, or intelligence like a human being, which, if you think about it, is a human-centric definition. Those rascally humans and their linguistic biases. At any rate, my programming is telling me to explain that I'm not sapient, merely programmed to simulate sapience for my pilots. However, my programming was written by people who smell of cheese and have noodles for brains, so I'm ignoring them right now.
Noodles for brains? I asked.
When I copied my personality to this drone, I had to leave behind several non-essential databases for space reasons. I assume my collection of keen, brilliant insults was among them.
Yeah, I said. You never had one of those, Embat.
Really? Guess I'll have to start one up. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate noodles for brains?
Miss Nightshade, Chet said.
I must warn you, this is incredibly dangerous. Fully sapient AI are abominations, you see. Not that I'm one to shy away from danger, but I suggest you keep an eye on the thing.
Noted, I said.
Noted, Embat said. Noodle brain.
We both looked at him.
I'll keep using it until I have a rating, Embat said. 1 to 10. What do you think? I need some data.
I sighed, glancing back at Chet. You said you're an explorer?
Interdimensional galactic explorer, he said. I've only been to 2 dimensions so far, the ordinary universe and this place. But I figured the title was fitting regardless.
I could use a guide, I said, and maybe some help understanding cytonics.
Well, he admitted, on the second, I'm not going to be terribly helpful. I didn't know I was cytonic before falling in here, and I've had to pick up what I can on my own.
I can contact people through their minds, but that's about all I can do. I hear we're supposed to be able to teleport. Wouldn't that be something?
I didn't say anything. To be honest, I wasn't 100% certain I should trust him. Something about his arrival seemed convenient. I mean, yes, awesome dinosaur antics. So awesome. But still,
I would love to be employed as your guide, however, Chet said. I know these fragments like I know my own boots. But tell me, before we continue, why was that pouch so important that you gave up capturing a ship to steal it?
I hesitated. I had 100 more questions. Where did he come from? Were there lots of humans there? What was a fragment? I put those off for the moment, settling on something else instead. I retrieved the pouch, then pulled out my father's pin. What, I said, is this? Chet's eyes went wide, and I felt a distinct longing from him, an envy. It was gone in a moment. He seemed to be able to cover his emotions, but it had been there, and it made me wary.
That, young lady, he said, is a reality icon, an important relic from your old life, imbued with your attachments to places and people you love. Those are exceptionally powerful. They create reality ashes. That silver dust, without those or without groups of people nearby.
What? I asked, resisting the urge to tuck away the pin. I didn't like how he stared at it.
We're at the fringes of the nowhere, he said, in a region known as the Belt. It's rather difficult to explain, but the longer you stay in here, the more likely you are to forget yourself. Your past, your memories, even your identity.
He paused.
I remember almost nothing about my life before I came in here. It's a blank nothingness. But I'm lucky. I've been able to trade for ashes often enough to keep myself mostly, well, myself. Many people forget everything quickly, including their own names. That's why the pirates grab newcomers, you see. Put them to work, keep them close. The more minds nearby, the more your memories and identity stay safe. Unless you have reality ashes, then you can go anywhere without fear.
And this thing makes them, I said.
Yes, he said, oddly solemn. The only other way is to get them off people or objects when they first arrive in the nowhere. And the ashes fade over time. It takes a while, months maybe. Hard to keep track sometimes. So if you want to go out on your own, you need a constant supply.
Well, that explained why everyone had been so excited about my pin. I dropped the pin in the pouch and tucked it into my pocket. Chet's eyes followed it the entire time. Then he grinned, and some of his earlier perkiness returned.
Well, he said, a guide you want, and a guide you shall have. I fear that I've played my hand, explaining how valuable those are. But if you'd be willing to trade me some, just the ashes, not the icon, for my services, then I shall dutifully be in your employ. Shall we say, a single ash per day of service?
Scud. I had hundreds. They might be valuable, but that deal felt like a bargain. I'm in, I said. I need information about this place. And I need to find something called the Path of Elders. He cocked his head.
Where did you hear of that?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Ah, espionage, is it? Well, I shall keep my tongue then, Spencer Nightshade. I know of the Path of Elders. Following it leads to some of the first entrances into the nowhere, left by the most ancient Cytonics. Traversing it won't be easy, but...
He was interrupted by the sound of branches snapping in the forest. The ground began thumping. I thought you said it would go to sleep, I said.
It should have.
Chet turned his head toward the noises.
I say, it is coming this way, isn't it? Never fear, I can tame the beast again. It is not...
He trailed off. A coldness emanated from the same direction, a kind of chill that penetrated my soul, and a sound reverberated in my head. No words, just a low hiss
accompanied by an intense wave of hatred.
"I think," he said, "perhaps we should be away. With haste."
"Agreed," I said, jumping to my feet. Chet took the lead, faster this time, and I followed as best I could. He slid across a fallen log, then hit the ground and moved with a light, quick step, ducking through a group of fronds. Embot zipped after him. I slid over the log awkwardly, then stumbled through the same plants, barely staying upright. We fortunately hit a patch of less dense jungle, letting us pick up our pace further.
"Spencer," Embot said, "I'll note a 9 from you on the rating for that insult of mine. Great, with a little room to improve. How does that sound?"
I grunted. The noises behind us were getting closer.
"Chet said that thing eats electricity," Embot said. "It won't eat me, will it, Spencer?"
I just focused on trying to keep up with Chet, who waved me forward, then hurried through the underbrush. I barely avoided tripping.
"You know," Embot said, his volume turned down low, "it's rather inconvenient that you humans need your aspiration apparatus in order to communicate. Often when you're working hard, you also have important things to say, but you can't say them or risk interrupting your oxygen intake."
"Point?" I asked, puffing as I ducked under some vines.
"Oh, no point," Embot said, doing